Thanks very much, and it's a pleasure to be here this morning. This morning I'm going to be running very quickly through some of the key issues around market integrity and some of the lessons that that we can learn from the experience in the EU ETS in particular. In light of some of the commentary that's been made in recent months, when in the debate around the Australian carbon price mechanism about the ETS being a failure, being all these problems with the ETS, and really sort of actually teasing out what some of those problems were, what's been done to respond to those problems in the EU, and how does the Australian carbon price mechanism that's been adopted through the Clean Energy Act and its related acts and regulations, how do they respond to some of those potential issues that arose in the EU? When talking about market integrity, I mean, it's a massive subject that covers a number of different areas. And in carbon markets, we're really looking at two... I see it in two phases in terms of market integrity. There's the integrity that exists within the context of the registry systems where units are created, transferred, traded, and ultimately retired. And then the market integrity that exists in the other financial markets, exchanges, and trading platforms, which are often regulated by other types of market instruments and corporate and securities regulations. Given the breadth of all of that, my focus is really on the integrity of the registry systems, but I will briefly touch on some of the other aspects of financial market regulation. So I guess a first question just in terms of the audience. I mean, how many of you are sort of familiar with the design elements of the European Emissions Trading Scheme, you know, what it covers and things like that? So there's a fair few there, and just very briefly, we've had the EU ETS is now in its second phase, and it's been a process of learning by experience through the first phase, moving into the second phase, which coincides with the first commitment period of Kyoto, and then there'll be significant changes as we move into the third phase. Regina's going to talk in a lot more detail about some of the key experiences with the EU ETS. But just from the perspective of market integrity, in the first phase we saw a lot of price volatility, and that comes down to some of the aspects around allocation and things like that. Second phase, we're seeing better management of caps and allocation, but we've had experience over the last couple of years in respect of fraud, theft of units, things like that. And so in phase three, we're really looking at ways in which we can sort of try and iron out some of those problems. It's important to note that, these types of issues are not unique to carbon markets. They exist in all financial markets, banking systems. So really, what we have is an emerging, developing market in the EU. It's not immune to the types of things that you see in any other banking or financial system. Just in terms of very briefly some of the key sort of issues around the ETS in terms of its success and failure, I think it's really important to note that what the ETS has done is create effectively a EU and a global price on carbon. It's set up a lot of the market infrastructure, and in this way it's an absolute leader in terms of developing and designing other emissions trading schemes in other economies. We've seen very clear infrastructure around electronic registry systems, the movement to be able to trade in a secondary and derivative market on exchanges and other platforms, and we've seen sort of we've seen the emergence of standardised documentation for trading and for market activity. So very, very important in terms of what has been done in the ETS, and it's the model that most countries have looked to in terms of setting up particularly the market infrastructure. In terms of the problems, I mean, this is where the headlines come in, where you hear about VAT fraud of $500 million plus, stolen EUAs, market on the verge of collapse because of people's lack of confidence in the system. But I mean, as I said before, these are problems that have been faced by other aspects of financial markets as well. Just to briefly touch on some of these issues and some of the examples. In 2010, there were examples of sort of VAT fraud or carousel fraud which came to light. I mean, that's basically where the exchange platforms were charging VAT to customers without accounting for it, and so taxable customers were deducting the VAT, and then the result of that was that they were getting credits from the national governments in which they were claiming VAT. So you were effectively getting people, getting some companies getting a benefit from the refunds and the VAT. That involved, has led to prosecutions in a number of in countries. In Germany, some leading banks and their employees have been prosecuted, and the governments are seeking to recover over $200 million or €200 million in terms of lost revenue. Similarly, in France, the French government is chasing up some of the registries with respect to over €300 million euros. Just last week, the German court that's been prosecuting the VAT fraud in Germany came out and suggested that there could be quite significant penalties for the individuals that have been involved in that type of activity. So they're looking at really sending a strong market signal that this behaviour is not appropriate. And as you'll see, there's also been changes to some of the EU regulations with respect to how VAT is treated in the system. Where there's been phishing expeditions, that's where you've got people sort of basically putting up fake websites, taking down people's login password data, and then using that to affect transactions. That led to the suspension of the EU registries back in February 2010, which had ongoing consequences, because if the registries are suspended, then you can't trade. Then in late 2010 and early 2011, there were a couple of examples, quite significant examples of online theft of EUAs from registry accounts. And the circumstances around that have ranged from a bomb threat being made to one of the registry headquarters and someone walking in and stealing data from computers in the registry, to people hacking into the registries and things like that. And in those examples, I mean, one of the things to note is, as part of the EU registry design, each of the participants, member states that are participating in the EU ETS, have their own national registry. So we've got the 27 member states and then the three accession countries, Liechtenstein, Norway, and who basically, there's an individual national registry for each member of the EU ETS, and they have very different levels of security. They've been designed on slightly different platforms, and so that means that some of them have been easier to hack into and to steal some of the units. What this this has led to again is this whole issue of registry suspension. So in January, all of the national registries were suspended, and the registries had to basically demonstrate that they were able to satisfy security checks in order to come back online. And so, as you can imagine, when the registries are suspended, there are all sorts of market implications in terms of settling trades and managing forward contracts and things like that. So not to mention, of course, what it means for the people who, working out whose EUAs have been stolen, tracking them, tracing them, and then working out if they can be recovered. It took quite a bit of time in a number of jurisdictions for those registries to reopen after they'd been suspended. So that, again, comes back to this question of confidence in the system. In terms of what the key issues with this issue of stolen EUAs were from a legal point of view, we had to give a lot of advice to our clients over the first couple of months of the year about what this meant and what customers should do, because if people are holding units and they don't know if they're stolen, they don't know if they've got good title to the units, they then can't trade and transact them. And one of the big issues, which has been recognised as a problem for a number of years in the EU ETS design, is that nowhere in the the EU ETS directive is any reference to what is the legal nature of a European emissions allowance. So there's nothing in the scheme that says that it's either personal property or a personal right or a proprietary right. You know, is it something that's an administrative grant or a license, or is it personal property that can be treated and is as personal property in the way that a car or a any other sort of physical item or unit could be treated. So good title has been a big issue, particularly since each national government has its own view on how these units are to be treated. So something that's treated as a proprietary right in the UK that you get indefeasible title to if you are a bona fide purchaser for value might be treated as a license in another country, and therefore questions attaching to title were a real issue. So, we were basically saying to clients, just suspend everything you're doing, do a full due diligence on where your units have come from, look at the registries that they have transacted through, if possible, since they were created, and work out at any point along that chain, if it was a unit that had been stolen, at any point did someone get good title to the unit that they could then pass on to other buyers. So that has been an issue which again has been addressed through the new registries regulation. And what the new registries regulation does is clarify that anyone who's holding an allowance or a Kyoto unit in the European Union registry, that shall constitute conclusive evidence that the account owner has ownership of that unit. So they're trying to basically create a system where you are deemed to have good title if you've purchased a unit and hold it in a registry account. In terms of the legal outcomes here, there's been questions about whether or not people can be compensated for the loss of the stolen credits, and also issues around insurance. Just briefly, there's been a number of steps undertaken by the EU to address some of the issues here. There have been amendments to deal with market integrity at a global level in terms of all energy and financial markets. The most important one on this slide in the context of emissions trading is the new registries regulation, which was adopted in November this year. And that provides a number of measures that are intended to prevent and avoid fraud. So, checks on transactions before they're settled, a 24-hour waiting period, making sure that the people who are engaging in transactions are authorised representatives, stronger know your client requirements for the intermediaries and those types of things, and also sort of steps that enable the registries to respond very quickly to any sort of indication that there may be fraud. So the ability to suspend not only registries but also accounts and transactions. Most importantly, going forward, for phase three of the EU ETS, there'll be a centralised registry system, so that problem in terms of different levels of security in the registries is largely addressed through having a one central registry that has hopefully strong, integrity in terms of its security and things like that. So then just very briefly talking about what this means for Australia. There are a number of design elements in the carbon price mechanism that really aim to avoid some of these problems. The first is that carbon units are very clearly specified as being personal property. They're represented in the national registry with a unique number. They have all of the attributes of personal property. They can be traded, transferred, cancelled, surrendered. But importantly, as with other sort of forms of personal property, you can create other types of equitable interests in these units. And as long as you're a bona fide purchaser for value, without any notice of defects in the title to the units, then you'll have good title to units. So that issue of working out whether or not something that has been stolen and then passed to you, if that comes to you in a circumstance where you've bought it from someone with no notice of defects in title, then you will have title to the units. In terms of registry security, the Clean Energy Act and the Australian National Registry of Emissions Units Acts have a number of measures in there which are designed to protect against fraudulent or dishonest conduct. There's extensive disclosure requirements in terms of opening accounts and holding accounts. That goes to the person who And the company that is implementing that, sort of demonstrating that they are basically a fit and proper person, and providing all of the identity checks that you would expect. There's a number of offences in both of the acts with quite significant penalties in terms of, you know, if you make a false entry in the register, if you submit false documents, if you know, if there's any sort of form of theft, all of these are punishable by quite significant criminal sanctions. And then there's also a number of provisions in both of the acts that deal with openness and transparency around holdings in the registries, so people have a sense of who is, you know, who holds accounts, and also in respect of significant holdings, where there are significant holdings, which is meant to give a sense of a greater sort of transparency in terms of the scope of the market and the number of units that are being held, and different types of units, including the Kyoto units and the Carbon Farming Initiative units. Then the regulator has a number of powers, and I probably don't need to go into too much detail on these. But importantly, in the context of where there is a likelihood or a perceived, evidence that there may have been some dishonest conduct, there's powers to suspend registry accounts without notice, and there's also powers with respect to suspending the registry as a whole to avoid anything that would affect the integrity of it, and also powers to deal with some of those electronic and computer glitches in terms of correcting entries and things like that. But importantly, where someone's rights are, in terms of the exercise of these powers, are potentially affected, there is, in most cases, a power for that person to basically seek a review of the decision or appeal against the decision. So if the regulator suspended an account and you say, well, you've actually got no reasonable grounds for suspension, you could basically bring administrative review proceedings in that respect. I won't go into this slide in detail. It's probably more just for reference going forward. But the main transactions at the moment in the Australian market will be through the registry. But we're looking at moving towards the same sort of system that you see in the EU and more mature markets, of having derivative and secondary markets, over-the-counter trades, exchanges doing forward and option trades. And so you would expect that some of the market players, the ASX and other trading platforms, will have a role to play in terms of the trading of carbon units. And all of those platforms and derivative markets are, subject to very extensive integrity provisions and rules under ASIC, and so it's expected that, if Australian units are then traded on these platforms, they'll be subject to the market integrity rules that apply to the platform that's licensed, and if there are new exchanges that are set up, they'll need to go through a process of obtaining that level of obtaining a license from ASIC and then being subject to market integrity principles. So we don't have centralised exchanges yet, but we are starting to see those same sort of steps that took place in the EU with respect of moving towards standard documentation. AFMA, the Australian Financial Markets Association, is developing standardised sort of ISDA confirmations and trades for carbon units. And, I think over time we'll see quite a lot of developments in this space. So in terms of just wrapping up, how do we compare? I mean, I'd say one thing is that at the outset we've got much greater clarity regarding the character of units and the indefeasibility of title. I think that's a very important aspect of the Australian scheme. I think our registry rules are very much generally provide a responsive framework to address any forms of suspicious activity. And I think we also have very, very comprehensive sanctions and penalties through both the Clean Energy Act and the Registries Act. So with that, I guess happy to answer any questions.